doing church, and this morning we're going to think about Sundays. Why do we meet on a Sunday? Is Sunday such a big deal? Isn't every day special? Well, let me begin with a story. We'll call it a parable. So listen carefully, and it may explain where we're moving. Now, once upon a time, the lord of the manor planted for himself a beautiful garden. And he invited all the children of the village to come and to play in his garden. And he invited them to come and play on the same day every week. And the children loved it. There were trees to climb, there were rolling lawns to play on, and there were secret dens. In fact, the Lord really made the garden for the children. But so that the garden could be enjoyed by all, he made some simple rules. No digging up the lawn, no chopping down trees, no spoiling the flowers. And his rules ensured that the garden could be enjoyed all the time, or for all time, by all the children. However, some of the gardeners were unhappy to see their beautiful garden so freely used. So they took it upon themselves to protect the garden and to reinterpret the Lord's rules. So no digging up the lawn became keep off the grass. And no chopping down trees became no climbing on trees. And no spoiling the flowers became no smelling the flowers. What then happened to the children? Well, instead of rejoicing in the Lord's goodness, they felt sad and excluded. And many no longer came to play as they used to. And those who did come sat on the benches looking glum. In the hands of these miserable gardeners, keeping the garden clean and tidy had become an end in itself. And over time, the children no longer came, until many in the village doubted that there even was a garden. And they came to believe that their own backyards were just as good as this supposed special garden. Well, Christian friends, have you understood the parable? It reflects the attitude of many of God's people to Sunday. What is Sunday? It's the Lord's Day. It's God's gift to his children. It's a beautiful garden to be enjoyed for all time by all the children. But it's been turned by some self-appointed guardians into a burden of do's and don'ts. And others reacting to this have denied the unique character of Sunday. They don't even believe there is a garden. All of which is very sad. Somehow, somewhere, we've lost sight of the wonder of God's day and its special benefit for all God's children, for the church. So this morning we're going to think about Sundays, and we have six things to say, six points. Why keep Sunday special? Well, point number one, because God himself keeps it. Now, after 6 days of extraordinary creativity in which God made the cosmos, we read Genesis chapter 2, verses 2 and 3, that he rested on the seventh day. In fact, he did more than rest. He set it apart. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. So Sabbath day became a day in which God particularly delights. But then further light is thrown on it by the remarkable words in Exodus chapter 31 and verse 13. This is what it says. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. Can you identify with what's going on here? Christian friends, you work hard on a project. It comes to completion. What do you feel? You feel a sense of elation, don't you, at what you've achieved. We're satisfied. It's a job well done. And the rest that follows is all the sweeter for it. Now, God makes the universe in 6 days. It is all very good. For he says reverently, it's a job well done. And so to mark the completion of his work, and to highlight his sense of satisfaction in what he's done, his sense of joy at the completion of the work, God calls the seventh day special, and he blesses it. It's a celebration of completeness. God is refreshed. After the work of creation, he enjoys this day of rest in a special and unique way. Now, Christian friends, what is it to be human? It's to be made in the image of God. To be human is to be like God in everything. And so when it comes to Sunday, when it comes to the Sabbath, we are to copy him. We are to imitate him. We're to follow his rhythm. We're to imitate his pattern for work and rest, keeping one day in seven special. What's more, we're not just to imitate his pattern, but we're to imitate God's keeping of his day. So do we? If God sanctifies it, if he sets it apart, if he calls it special, who are we to treat Sunday like any other day of the week? But if we keep it special, then we, like God, we also will be refreshed. So why keep ourselves from a day like that? Point number two. The Sabbath was made for man. Now Jesus said, Mark 2, verse 27, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Now Sabbath simply means rest. That's all it means. That's what the word means. It means rest. So this day was given to us by God for our blessing. The Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. So it's given to us for our blessing. Now think about it. Adam lived in paradise. Every day he walked with God. Every day he was perfectly happy. He had the perfect job, the perfect marriage, the perfect wife. And yet upon the heart of this perfect man, God wrote the law of keeping one day in seven special, different, unique, other. Now why did Adam, of all people, need a Sabbath? Because the center of Adam's life was not his work, or his marriage, or his family. The center of his life was God. After all, his first full day was what? A Sabbath. Do you see? This day brought balance. It brought symmetry to Adam's world. If you like, it was the reset button. It was made for him to draw near to God and to delight in his Maker. Now, Christian friends, think. Think often when we come to Sundays, we don't think about these things. We don't work it through. Think about it. If a perfect man in a perfect world needed one day in seven, how much more do we, sinners, in a fallen world, in a cursed world, need a Sabbath day? In this world, we are always likely to forget God. So God spells it out. Exodus 20. Remember. So on introducing something new, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. He's reminding his people of the day that's been in place since the completion of creation. A day that God himself put there for our abundant good. A day that God put there so that we keep him at the very heart, the very center of our lives. So why should we want to keep ourselves from a day like that? And point number three, a change of day. Now so far we've spoken of the Sabbath day as the seventh day of the week, the Saturday. Today is not Saturday, today is Sunday. So why do we keep Saturday special? Why do we keep the last day of the week special? Because the Sabbath has changed. It's changed from the last day of the week to the first day of the week. Well, who changed it? The only one who can change it. The Lord of the Sabbath. The original pattern of 6 days work, one day rest, has been replaced with a new pattern. One day rest, 6 days work. There's still one in seven. But now it's the first day of the week. All right, someone's thinking, all right, so what's the evidence? Okay, the evidence, we begin in Luke 24. What happens in Luke 24, verse 1? Now on the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they and certain other women with them came to the tomb bringing the spices which had been prepared. But they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. Then they went in and they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. The empty tomb. Why is it empty? Because he's risen. And so on that first day, Jesus meets with his disciples on the Emmaus Road. So it was while they conversed and reasoned that Jesus himself drew near and went with them. And then you remember he opens the scriptures and expounds them all the things concerning himself. And then they constrain him. They say, abide with us, stay with us. And then they come to this dramatic moment when their eyes are opened and they see it's Jesus. And then he vanished from their sight. And what do? They rose up that very hour and returned to Jerusalem and found the 11 and those who were with them gathered together saying, the Lord is risen indeed and has appeared to Simon. So he's appeared to the two on the Emmaus Road. He's appeared to Simon Peter. But then we go on now, as they said these things, Jesus himself stood in the midst of them and said to them, peace to you. Jesus appears to his disciples. But of course, one disciple isn't there, is he? So does Jesus appear to that disciple on the Monday, or the Tuesday, or the Wednesday, or the Saturday? Who's not there? Thomas isn't there. So when does he appear to Thomas? John 20. And after 8 days, so it's the next Sunday, his disciples were again inside, and Thomas was with them. Jesus came, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst and said to them, peace to you. Then he said to Thomas, reach out your finger here, and look at my hands, and reach out your hand here, and put it into my side. Do not be unbelieving, but believing. And Thomas answered and said to him, my Lord and my God. Jesus waits till the following Sunday to meet with Thomas. Jesus hallows the first day of the week. Hence, it comes to be called the Lord's Day. Revelation 1 verse 10 says, John, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day. And John, with whom do you meet when you're in the Spirit on the Lord's Day? He meets with the risen, ascended Lord Jesus Christ. And on the first day of the week, the Spirit is poured out at Pentecost. It's another Sunday where the Spirit comes and the New Testament church is born. And so it was on the first day of the week that the early church gathered. Paul writes to the Corinthians. He tells about the collection he's making for the saints in Jerusalem and Judea. And what does he say to them? He says, on the first day of the week, let each one of you set something aside. When you meet together on the first day of the week, that's when I want you to put your money to one side, so when I come, there's a collection already made and I can take it. What's more, Paul arrives at Troas. It's a Monday. He's in a hurry. There's an urgency about him. But he wants to meet with the church. So what does he do? He waits a further 7 days so he can preach to the gathered church on the Sunday. Now on the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul, ready to depart the next day, he's held on, because he wants to be with the church when it meets together on the first day of the week. Paul, ready to depart the next day, spoke to them and continued his message until midnight. So, never complain about long sermons. Paul could preach till midnight and beyond. The Sabbath has moved. It's gone from the last day of the week to the first day of the week. Who moved it? The Lord of the Sabbath. He said, it's different. Separate. I'm making this day now my day. But in changing the day, there's been no breaking of the fourth commandment. Jesus lay in the tomb on the Saturday, 6 plus 1. The next day he rose, 1 plus 6. Back-to-back Sabbaths. So it's still one day in seven, but it's now the first day of the week. And you can see why, can't you? If the seventh day marked the completion of God's creation, the first day marks the completion of God's work of redemption. if God was refreshed on the seventh day, Jesus lives again on the first day. If the seventh day reminds us of the week of creation, the first day proclaims to us the new creation, the day of resurrection. And as we look at what God has done, this great work of salvation, we declare, don't we, that it is very good. And we mark the day with praise and joyful delight in God our Saviour. And if the day of the week has changed, so too has the day itself. It's put off its Old Testament clothes. It's divested itself of those. And it's put on New Testament clothes. Well, point number four. Somebody's thinking, well, yeah, all right, okay, but hasn't the Sabbath passed? Isn't every day special? Isn't the fourth commandment the only one that's not repeated in the New Testament? Do we really need to keep Sunday special? Do you remember what Jesus said? The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath. Now, Christian friend, think. If the Sabbath was made for man, if, says Jesus, it is for my good, why would then he abolish it a few months later? And if Jesus, the Son of Man, the one who will inherit an everlasting kingdom, that's what the title means, that's what he speaks of, if he's Lord of the Sabbath, did he say this to prepare us for his abolition just a few months later? And if the gospel accounts were written 30 years after Jesus' ascension, why then do the gospel writers give so much attention to our Lord's teaching on a subject which would now be irrelevant? There is an abiding Sabbath. The garden is still there. It still exists. It's there to be enjoyed by all the children. Now, of course, every day is special. Of course, every day is to be lived for the glory of God. But God's far more practical than we are. Don't we live all our days in the shadow of the cross? But we still need the Lord's table, don't we? We still need to have a set time when we stop and sit down and remember his dying love for us. We say, well, of course, we're always to dwell in the shadow of the cross. But God is practical. He knows we forget. So he's given us the Lord's table to remember him. So says God, I know what you're like. One day, set apart, especially for me. Because if you keep this day for me, nothing will better guarantee that you'll keep the other days for me. If you live this day right, nothing will better guarantee that you live the other 6 days of the week right. Point number five. How then do we keep the Sabbath day holy? How do we keep Sunday special? Well, turn with me to the reading which we had, Matthew chapter 12. And in Matthew 12, we meet these miserable gardeners, the Pharisees. Now, when they read the Lord's command, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh is the Sabbath of the Lord your God, in it you shall do no work, they reinterpreted that command with all their usual strictness, effectively ejecting the children from the garden. So when they see, verse 1, the hungry disciples plucking heads of grain and then rubbing those grains between their hands, they look at it and they think, that's reaping, that's threshing, that's work. And they're horrified, verse 2. They say to Jesus, look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath. But the gardeners have missed the point. Keeping the garden clean and tidy isn't an end in itself. The garden is for the children. The essence of the Sabbath is rest. It's not there to burden people with a list of do's and don'ts. So Jesus cuts across it all. He sweeps away their petty traditions and he sets before them an open Bible. He says, verse 3, have you not read? Verse 5, have you not read? Verse 7, but if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. Jesus says, come on, let's open the Bible. What does the Bible say? Now, it's obvious from Jesus' words that the Sabbath day is not for doing nothing. That's how the Pharisees saw it. They say, no work means you don't do anything then. On the contrary, Jesus' emphasis is on a different sort of activity. So verses 3 and 4, just as hungry David was allowed to eat the temple showbread, so it's quite legitimate on this day to cater for the necessities of life. We need to eat, don't we? We need to drink. We don't need to keep warm today, but in the winter you need to keep warm, don't you? We need to take a Sunday stroll. And of course, some people have very necessary jobs which require them to work on Sundays. There are doctors, nurses, policemen, emergency services, and so on. And so verses 5 and 6, just as the priests work hard on the Sabbath in the temple and are blameless, so it's quite legitimate on this day to serve the Lord with all your might. It's good on a Sunday evening that the preacher should feel exhausted, having preached his heart out morning and evening. And so verses 11 and 12, just as Jesus healed the man with a withered hand on the Sabbath, so it's quite right to do good on the Sabbath, to visit, to heal, to help, to give hospitality, to take the gospel out, to do all that I can to make a difference. Of course that's okay. Verse 12, therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Who said it wasn't? Those miserable gardeners. Verse 7, but if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. Jesus doesn't want us tiptoeing round a minefield of evangelical political correctness. This is a day for big-hearted Christianity. Believers whose lives are spilling over with warmth, love, compassion, generosity, hospitality. Whose first thought isn't to point the finger and say, well, what's going on there? But whose first thought is to do good, to make a difference. How can I serve the Lord? How can I bring glory to Him? We can say so much more. This is the Lord's day. It's therefore a day of His presence. On this resurrection day, what did Jesus do? He met with His disciples, didn't He? And He calmed their fears. He says to them, peace. Peace to you. It's the day when the disciples realized they weren't dreaming. And with an ecstatic joy, they declared, we've seen the Lord. It's the following Sunday that a skeptic believes. And Thomas, he's given the proof that he so rashly demanded. And having received this wonderful assurance, he exclaims, he sees things he's never seen them before, my Lord and my God. It's the day when two weary, worn, sad disciples on their way to Emmaus are transformed. They have a real meeting with Jesus through His word. They have a heartwarming experience of the risen Lord, which they never want to end. They constrain Him. When did you constrain someone? When did you sort of almost hold on to them and say, don't go, please, don't go? They've had such an experience of the Lord that they want it to go on forever. Stay with us. They constrain Him. And it's a Lord's Day when John, in the Spirit, he meets with the Alpha and the Omega, and he sees into heaven. It's a day of His presence. Don't we say we long to know more of Christ? Christ says, I've given you therefore this day in a special way that you might know more of me. Do you want to see Jesus? Do you want that heartwarming experience of Christ through His word? Do you want to receive peace and joy and assurance in knowing Him? Do you want to fall down before Him in worship, my Lord and my God? Do you want it to be that His presence ravishes your soul such that you never want it to end and you constrain Him? Do you want to see into heaven? Then keep the Lord's day and keep it with his people. Who spent a miserable week because he wasn't there when the disciples met together? It was Thomas. And Jesus didn't make things better for Thomas on the Monday, did he? Or the Tuesday, or the Saturday. He let Thomas live through a miserable week because he had to be there on the Sunday with the other disciples before Jesus put things right. I wonder how many miserable weeks have you spent? Because when God's people were there, you kept away. And it was an awful week. And you put the blame somewhere else. And the Lord said, I'm not meeting with you until you gather with my people. And together with them, I'll disclose myself to you. It's a day of his presence. So don't keep away. You know, you can have a quiet time every day of the week. But if you don't keep the Lord's day, you're backsliding. The Bible doesn't command you to have a quiet time. The Bible does command you to keep the Sabbath day holy. Jesus says, this is my day. It's a day of my presence. Keep it for me. Meet with me. Gather with my people. I don't normally say things like this, but I'm going to say it today. In my 19 years as a pastor, a pretty accurate guide to people's spiritual temperature is what they do with this day. Trouble is always brewing when people keep themselves apart, when people stop coming, when people keep away. That's been my experience 99 times out of 100. It's the barometer of our spiritual health, what we do with this day. So it's a day of his presence. He meets with his disciples. So don't keep away. Meet with his disciples. Keep the day he intends us to keep it. And if it's a day of his presence, it's a day of his power. When did the Spirit come? Jesus' other self. When were the disciples equipped for service? When were 3,000 converted at the preaching of the gospel? When was the first baptismal service? When was the New Testament church born? On a Sunday. So brothers and sisters, why keep ourselves from a day like this? It's a day of his presence, it's a day of his power, and it is a foretaste of heaven. In the Old Testament, the Lord's Day refers to the last day of history, when God will create a new heavens and a new earth, and all traces of the curse will be expunged forever. Now this day is a reminder of that day. This day is the first fruits of that everlasting rest. Sunday, in a special day, is when we enter into the rest that Jesus has won for us by his cross. This day is a foretaste of that eternal Sabbath. So do you want to be heavenly minded? Do you? Do you want to be prepared for that hour when you must leave this world? Do you want to be unashamed at Christ's return, the Lord's day? Then keep this day holy. Each Lord's day is like a stepping stone to get us safely across the wilderness of this world until we arrive safely in the promised land. So how do we keep the Sabbath day holy? Yes, we cater for the necessities of life. Yes, we serve the Lord. Yes, we do good. And we avoid all that evangelical political correctness of tiptoeing around, oh, what am I going to do? Have I done that wrong? But especially, we don't go to church on this day. But like those New Testament believers, we meet with the church. And the Lord promises to meet with us. It's a day of his resurrection presence. It's a day of his power when his Spirit is poured out. It's a foretaste of heaven. Our forefathers used to call this day the market day for the soul, the day when you get all your spiritual provisions for the week. Well, if your cupboards are bare, you know the reason why. That's why we meet together on this day. It's not some sort of Christian tradition. Not some sort of habit we've got ourselves into. It's because the Lord wills it. It's His pleasure. And we meet together to share, to sing, to praise, to pray. We meet together to think great thoughts of God and to think of Jesus and His cross. That's why we listen to His word, isn't it? And our great desire is that we would have that heartwarming experience of Jesus like they did on the Emmaus Road. And brothers and sisters, having met together, let's go home together. Let's share the day with one another. Let's keep His day together and together talk of the Lord and of all His kingdom and of all that He's done for us. You know, when we get to glory, we will see all the good that has been done by keeping this day holy. Well, we close with point number 6. And that's this. It's to get under the skin of this day. Now, you may want to turn to it. Isaiah chapter 58. Isaiah 58. Getting under the skin of this day. Now, Isaiah 58, we encounter a miserable, cold, unloving, burdensome, bad-tempered, self-seeking religion. And God remarks on it, verse 5. He says, "Is it a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head like a bulrush? Is it to spread out sackcloth and ashes? Would you call this a fast and an acceptable day this is an acceptable day to the Lord?" So against that backcloth, this sort of rather miserable, bad-tempered religion, the self-seeking, it's all about me, what's God's remedy? Well, if you read the chapter, it's an open-hearted love for one another. And it's a wholehearted devotion to God. And where will this be seen? What's the real test of heart religion? What's the barometer of my devotion to God? And the answer is found, says God, in my attitude to His day. Verse 13. "If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honourable, and shall honour Him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord. And I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken." Do you see the Sabbath? It's not a fast, it's a feast. It's not a desert, it's a garden. It's to be of a delight. And so of necessity there are negatives. It says God is not a day for doing as I please. However, the negatives are to clear away the clutter and the distractions so that we can delight ourselves in a single-minded way in the Lord. So everything that militates against keeping this day for the Lord is to be swept away. Here are two lovers. They go out for that special evening. What do? Do they ignore each other? Does he whisper softly in her ear, say, "I'll be with you soon, darling, but I'm just off to play footy with the lads"? Does she catch him with her eyes and mouth the words, "Oh, I love you, but I'd rather be home watching the television"? What would that say about the state of their relationship? Now, those things at any other time are absolutely fine. But tonight, when they're together as lovers, those things are imposters. If their relationship is to flourish, they must say no to those things, which at other times are perfectly legitimate and fine. And the strength of their no simply reflects the strength of their yes to being together, to falling in love, to enjoying each other's company. They want special, unhurried, uninterrupted time together. As lovers, they want nothing to come between them. And that's why they say no to those things which any other time are fine. But they're imposters in that situation. Now, Christian friends, we've got 6 days, haven't we, to watch television, to go shopping, to play football, to do sport. Is it too much, says Jesus, to set aside one day to be with me in a special way? What does it say about my relationship with the Lord if one day seems one day too long? One day too much? This is the day for delighting in Him. Keep the Sabbath day holy, he says. Keep it for me. Kick out the imposters. And God's promise couldn't be more inviting, could it? What does he say, verse 14? Then you shall delight yourself in the Lord. I used to hate Sundays as a Christian. I couldn't get on with them. Well, on Sundays I used to go to cinema. Sundays I used to play sport. Sundays I used to go to a restaurant, have a drink, keep the day like any other day. And I hated the day. And then I discovered what the Bible actually said. And the reason why that tension and that guilt and that sense of the day never being what it should be was because I didn't understand what the teaching was. And I found, like Robert Murray M'Cheyne, he said, I love the Lord's day. When the day is kept for him, suddenly you will delight yourself in the Lord. And he comes and he discloses himself in all his wonder. If you keep this day, it will become for you the best of days. I'll enjoy the Lord as I've never enjoyed him before. I'm running to meet him, he'll take me into his embrace. And as our hearts beat as one, I'll be able to say with the Shulamite, I am my beloved's and he is mine. It's a weary world, isn't it? It's a cursed world. We're marching through a parched wilderness. But this day is an oasis for the soul. And on this day he pours out living water upon our dry souls. And we live again. And we enjoy him. And we enjoy his blessings in ever deeper ways. And the Sabbath becomes a foretaste of heaven itself.